All right, we're going to go and get started. I'd like to say thank you for everyone for taking time out of your afternoon to attend our session. We're going to go over some pretty interesting topics in this presentation, and so we're going to start at a little bit of a high level, but we're also going to go very, very deep. So as you see some of these slides you're going to see, don't think it's all just marketing fluff and you're going to sit here and get bored and fall asleep. It's not that type of presentation, trust me. That's not how I build them. That's not how I tailor them. We're going to go super deep, very technical, and we're going to have lots and lots and lots of things to see. So most of what we're going to talk about is going to be focusing on Zen Desktop 7, what's new, what's out, the different types of designs you can do, because it's not your grandfather's Citrix. It's not a one-trick pony, so to speak. It's completely different. And if you haven't played with it, you're in for a big awakening. It's not the same as it was before. We'll also go through a ton of demos. If you can see, I have about 6 different laptops up here. So you're going to see a massive amount of demos, from client demos to server-side demos, a bunch of stuff. We'll also, as we get closer to the end, give away a solid-state drive. So by show of hands, who wants one? Great. And who's just here because they had nothing else better to do? Excellent. No worries. Well, welcome anyway. I like a brave man. And of course, at the very end, we're going to have some Q&A. We also are, hopefully, if time permits, going to show you some prototype code of stuff that you have never seen before. It's brand new, it's cutting edge, it's right off the developer's table, so chances are it might break. So keep that in mind. Next to me is Nick Cox. Nick, I'm going to go let you drive then.
Thank you. Tony's web dragged out from the US, I'm the token Australian on stage today. So
yes.
I can say there's some usual suspects here. Anybody here got Citrix deployed in their environment? I should see most of the hands. Perfect.
Very good.
All right.
Thank
you're
going
to get high value out of this session, okay? If you don't, you at least might learn something. So about why you want it. But I'm going to just quickly start off and a little bit of a history lesson. All week we've heard about TechEd's 20 years old, and there's a good reason why Citrix and Microsoft do work better together. There is a long history, and I'll talk about that in a sec. But you know, both Microsoft and Citrix are leaders in their own space. There's definitely the leader of the Microsoft in the least the desktop space. Try and talk. Should add something to it. And Citrix definitely is the leader in the virtualization of the desktop space. We've been in this space for 20 years. We're good at it, and I'm going to show you. Tony's going to show you why we've got a definite future here, and you will. You'll walk away impressed. There's no doubt about that. What we're going to talk about is we've spent a lot of time talking about the next version of Windows about to be released, and the relevance of that in the architecture and delivery of applications and desktops. So I was just talking to Tony a moment ago. DNA, desktop and applications. This is what DNA stands for, we'll walk our way through that. But if I could just take a moment, we're talking about hundreds to tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of desktops. I'm going to do a plug right now for a session I'm doing tomorrow. 100,000 desktops is entirely possible and deliverable. Okay, you want to learn about that, 3:30 tomorrow in one of the big arenas. Bring some friends, because if this number of people come tomorrow, we're in trouble. You'll never get a prize. Citrix and Microsoft have been working together with a common vision, and that is desktop virtualization, application virtualization, and user virtualization. These things enable us to break the pieces apart and dynamically assemble the desktop delivery to what Tony's going to walk us through. So how did we get here? I want to just walk our way through. Interesting, on this slide, in 1989, I started in the IT industry. That's a long time ago now, because I can tell every time I look in the mirror, there's gray hair that I never saw before. There's some interesting points in time. When we sold effectively terminal services to Microsoft, which was built into NT4. OS 2 was a system for OS 2. Who remembers WinFrame? Has anybody here deployed WinFrame? Look at that. Tony.
Amazing.
So, that's before my time in Citrix, I know that much. Metaframe XP. These are really big inflection points in the timeline of Citrix and Microsoft's relationship. The release of Windows 2000 and the supporting application set, there was a joint development agreement put together between Microsoft and Citrix about a commitment to making terminal services better. To the point now, it's RDS, and it's definitely, I saw it looking at it again yesterday, it's a strong platform, and Citrix makes it better. Presentations 4.5, PS 4.5, who's got that in their environment still? Okay,
wow.
We're going to show you why you don't need it anymore. Windows 7, there's an interesting point up there, actually, previous one, let me just go back a bit. To do that, but who uses NetScaler to do anything more than Access Gateway? Okay, Microsoft deliver and accelerate their websites with it, as do a lot of other large internet-facing companies. It's a powerful thing. And in more recent times, you see, I don't know when you're looking across the bottom here, and I'm trying to work, so I'll give Tony some time to do all these magical demos he's going to show us. But Citrix has been recognised by Microsoft again and again and again as being a strategic partner that adds significant value, right? And that's because you guys use us to access Windows platforms, Windows applications, from things not just Windows-based, right? The number of iPads and the likes, and being able to work from home is strong and strong. So we're going to spend a bit of time talking about Project Excalibur. That was released, it's general availability now. What Tony's going to show us and walk us through is the capability of Zen Desktop 7. I'll just expose you to this. Zen Desktop 7 is the new name for all things that we used to know as Zen Desktop and Zen App. Okay, and certainly with the release of Windows Server 2012 and R2, we're still on that road and driving hard to meet their release dates. I'm not going to steal any more of Tony's thunder because that's the risk of me talking, actually. I'm going to hand back the power wand to Tony, and I'm going to step out of the way because there's a lot going on up here, and take us away.
Cool. Thanks, Nick. All right, so we're going to go and continue. And like I said, there was two slides about marketing. That's it. So now we're going to go deep
marketing
dive.
Guys sitting down.
Yep. So what is version 7 about, conceptually? Seeing as though we're kind of close to New Zealand, I thought I'd throw a real easy geek metaphor in. It is one ring, one console in our world to rule them all effectively. We took the best of apps, the best of desktops, and merged them into one UI to make it simpler and easier for you to choose a design that's based upon the business problem you're trying to solve. Throughout all this presentation, that's all you're going to see are designs, design choice 1 through design choice 100, per se. And each one of these are valid things you'll be able to understand and figure out how do I apply them and when is the right time for me to use them in my environment. So version 7, like we talked about earlier, it takes a big leap forward from where we were before. We focus more and more about mobility because that's really what we see as a future at Science Citrix. The idea of carrying big, huge, massive-sized laptops is pretty much not going to be the future anymore. It's all about small to medium size. Things that are easy to see and easy to consume is the way we see the future for IT people as far as end users as well. The ability for us to take those different devices and provide a mechanism so that they're able to be used over any place, any location. That's not new to us, but being able to do it on small items, small handheld devices, that is new. So you'll be able to see some of those enhancements and some of those demos that we have later on. But let's look at the architecture, because I saw there were some hands in here of people that had CPS 4.5. So to give you a little history about myself, I haven't always been at Citrix. I've been here for almost 7 years. But before that, I was an enterprise architect. And I actually had a Sydney office not too far from here where I had quite a few amount of users. If you ever had a person call you between 3 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock and ask you to participate in a survey of saltine crackers, I'm sorry. Those are people I helped service. So that company was stationed here, but my job day to day was a Citrix administrator architect. So I've sat in those shoes for 10,000 users. I breathed that every single day for 7 years. So I'm not just a vendor guy, but I did do my time, earn my stripes, got my battle scars, spent many, many nights working in the enterprise environment. But where does that leave us from then to now? So if we look at yesterday, and for some of you out there, this is still applicable, what's unique about version 7 is a little bit different. Today, you can see everything is isolated, everything is split in terms of roles and owners. If you're a ZenApp administrator, you've got this massive SQL server, it's got its own entity, its own database. That's where everything is stored at, if you kind of look at the architecture here. The same thing applies for Zen Desktop. Separate controller, separate infrastructure, separate SQL database. Everything is siloed from start to finish. There was no concept of merging anything. Now, there were some things that changed in terms of something called FMA. And I think we have a little bit of a pointer here. And FMA is labeled right here at the bottom, the very right-hand corner. It says Zen Desktop 5.6. That's when we introduced something called FlexCast Management Architecture. And really what that was the ability to take certain designs and leverage them in a VDI world. However, that didn't apply to ZenApp. He was still his own guy, his own person with his own separate architecture, and still is for many of you today. But version 7 completely changes that for Zen Desktop. You can also see here things are still separate in the current architecture of yesterday, where you have power capacity management, if you're using that for throttling your ZenApp servers, if you're using things like PBS, that's still a separate entity and still is for version 7, but we're also working to address that in our next release. You also see here, in terms of the interface from the user perspective, receiver is still that entry point, has and always will be for getting into the apps and desktops. However, web interface, most of you probably still use, that is gone. That is not what's part of today's architecture. Everything that you knew, for the most part, in regards to ZenApp and Zen Desktop pretty much changed in version 7. It's a completely new UI, a completely new interface, completely new way of doing things. If you're a Zen Desktop 5.6 customer, some concepts may seem very, very similar. However, some may be completely brand new to you if you've only done ZenApp. So it's going to be a learning curve because you're getting the best of both worlds. So as you look through here, you can see we have the same functionality. Receiver is still there for the end user. Got to have it. That's the way they're going to get into the apps and desktops every single time. That hasn't changed. What has changed is the entry point here, which is called Storefront. That's the replacement of web interface if you haven't used that yet. It's a different look and feel. It's more of an iTunes-like approach to self-servicing apps. If we look over here in terms of Directory Studio, that's the main UI right now in terms of modern user performance within the infrastructure. Studio is like we had in version 5.6. That's your way as an artist, per se, to design and paint your architecture, to build your desktops, to build your apps. Studio is your entry point into building everything for desktop and apps in version 7. But you can see what's kind of nice here is the VDA, and that's the agent that goes on your desktop OS or your Windows Server OS. It can now be delivered in either operating system. So if you're going to build application server workloads, old school ZenApp, not a problem. You're going to put the VDA on that particular OS image, and away you go to building your images. But what's nice here is whether you're doing ZenApp or Zen Desktop, you have one SQL database. That's it. No need to split the architecture. One SQL database is all you need. All the tables are written separately, so nothing conflicts. But you don't have to have two separate SQL databases or two separate SQL instances. Those days are gone. It's all about unification and making it simpler. So what is new in version 7 that we've changed? We talked about FlexCast earlier. That allows us to do much, much more than what we ever had before. So we've taken the best of remote desktop services. We've also taken a remote PC and some other cool features like local app access, which I'll show later on, and we've merged those as a choice, a design that you can do for version 7. We've also made wizards really, really simple to use in terms of making the design for desktops right simple. We changed wizards, we've added some things for logging administration, so if you have a specific security compliance rule, you've got to log everything, you've got to see everything that happened, every change, every thing that may occur within the infrastructure. It's logged. You can get that granular logging any given time. In terms of the personal desktops, we've added a lot of changes here. We've put profiling, which used to be a separate entity, that's now embedded in the virtual desktop agent. So when you install the virtual agent and you want to build a bunch of Windows 7 desktops or Windows Server desktops, profiling is automatically included in there, as well as personal vDisks, if that's the way you're looking to go for storing certain end user stuff. For next gen, we support it for version 7. If you're going down the road of Windows 8, Server 2012, that's supported out the gate. If you're looking at doing System Center Service Pack 1, we also support that as well in SQL 2012. Those are the huge, big, big, major architecture changes we started supporting in version 7. We never really had that before. You couldn't do Windows 8, you couldn't do Windows 2012. You couldn't do that in version 5.6. It wasn't applicable. It just didn't work. We had to completely rewrite the VDA, completely rewrite the UI so we can make all that stuff work. But now in version 7, you can do it. So if you have a project and that's the road you're trying to go down to support those OSs, you can do that in version 7. A lot of cool things here, HDX Insight, if you want to get more in-depth information about Netscaler traffic that passes through, for example, a user login timeout is slow, but you want to see where that data occurred at. Was it the beginning, where they're going through the storefront and hitting the Netscaler, all the way to the end where they're actually in the desktop? That sort of HDX information is captured, so you can get granular statistics on that. So let's go over the architecture a little bit more. So there's two major things as we talk about version 7. We have controllers, and the controller is basically the mechanism, for those of you that aren't familiar with version 7, that is the way that we make the connection to the desktop or the app. The controller is a mandatory person. He sits there, and his whole job in life is to figure out, okay, you came in, you get this desktop. Okay, you came in this way, you get this app. That's what the controller does, for those of you that are using CPS 4.5 or even earlier. Workers are quite simply just the agent. When we design the infrastructure, we need this virtual desktop agent, but it's more than just client operating systems. You can see here, conceptually, we're talking about workers. We have this big Airbus A380, right? That is basically your one-to-many relationship. That is ZenApp, RDS workloads, server workloads, many users, one operating system shared. Versus here, we have your super fast fighter jets. That's your VDI. That's your Windows clients, Windows 7, Windows 8. That sort of architecture is slightly different than Windows Server 2012. Each one of these we support. So this whole concept of workers and controllers is new in version 7. So if you haven't played with it, it'll start to kick in. If you're used to version 5.6 of Zen Desktop, not a problem. You grab that right away. Here's how it looks like in terms of catalogs. So we have our existing SQL Server, like I mentioned, one single database. No need to worry about having a database A, B, and C for different infrastructures. It's just one. We use a concept of catalogs like we did in version 5.6, where we think about catalogs as like an OU and AD. Once you have your OU at the top, inside your OU, you have nested OUs, or groups, or objects. That's what a catalog's job is. Inside that catalog, you're gonna have these different groups or subscribers, and those groups are gonna be your client operating systems, or your server OSs. That's this sort of relationship. It's kind of like a marriage where you can't have a catalog without a group, and you can't have a group without a catalog. They both go together. In terms of what you can do in First Studio, it's pretty simple. It is the only interface you need for building desktops and apps in version 7. You can use a delegated administrator logging, you can do HDX Insight, you can do just about everything you can for building and monitoring all from one particular UI. The only thing that's a little bit different is Director, and Director is where we can actually monitor the user performance, see what the hypervisor's doing, look at ICA statistics or HDX statistics. That is a separate entity, but it's a web-based portal. But when you install your controller and you build it, it's automatically part of a role. All right, so let's look at DNA Design 1. So I've got just a few of these we'll go through. And the first one is really just about how we're going to publish desktops. For most of you guys who are using ZenApp, it's pretty much a one-to-many relationship. There's really no way to do VDI unless you're doing it some other way. Or maybe you have a separate version 5.6 infrastructure. When we're doing it with version 7, it really doesn't matter because all you're doing is figuring out what's the business pain you're trying to solve, whether it's pooled, static, remote PC, it doesn't matter. Each one of these desktops you can build on demand and you can figure out what is the right set of use case scenarios you're trying to solve. So we could do pooled random, where anybody logs in, gets any particular VDA or VDI desktop they want. User information is not persistent, it's discarded upon log off. If we did pooled static, let's say Nick logs in, 5 hours later he logs out, he comes back tomorrow, he's gonna get that exact same persistent desktop because it's statically assigned to him. Dedicated is somewhat also similar. It's a one-to-one relationship. There's no particular provisioning, there's no single image management, there's no multi-image management. It's just one VM, one thing assigned to Nick, it's his own additional desktop. Remote PC is probably the best kept secret. If you don't use this, it's the easiest way for you to do Zen Desktop. And it's exactly what it is. You're slapping the virtual desktop agent on a physical machine. No hypervisor needed. It's the easiest way for you to do VDI without having to go through the potential pain of building the hypervisor, getting the management stack in place. You just put it on a machine. It could be in your cubicle. You can join it to the domain if it's not already there, and you configure it inside Studio. So remote PC is the easiest way for you to do VDI without having to use a hypervisor. So let's go through and show what a demo looks like. And I will flip over to this machine here. Okay, can everybody see my screen? I'm a Lumber guy, so I like him a lot. He's a funny guy. All right, so let me go and use my mouse. And let's go directly into the console. So first off, if you haven't seen version 7, you can see this is what the UI looks like. Now, I've done my homework like all good chefs. I've prepared my stuff ahead of time. I've made some catalogs. I've made some groups. I provisioned a ton of stuff so you can see, in theory, what a production environment would look like. So you can see on the left-hand side, we have catalogs. Like I mentioned, a catalog is that top layer, kind of like the OU. And that catalog is then married to your desktop group. They can't go without each other. In the terms of order creation, you would create your catalog here first. So let's go through that process and figure out what that's like if you want to create some simple desktops. Now here's where we can figure out which type we're going to do. We can either say we're going to do desktop OS or server OS. And at this point, we choose. Now, we can say, well, I want to do remote PC because it's just a machine in my cube. Why not give that a shot? So I would select that option. But most people are really probably going to go down the VDI route with using desktop OS. Now, because we're using version 7, we can select three different ways of doing this. We can say, okay, I know these are going to be virtual machines, and I'm going to use machine creation services, which is our snapshotting technology. And for those of you that are new to it, there are use cases for it, and there are not use cases for it. It only supports a hypervisor, number one. So machine creation services cannot be done on a physical machine like you would use for a remote PC. In terms of PVS, that's pretty much our secret sauce. We've had that for the last 5+ years. That is very unique because it does physical and virtual. So if you have a use case where you're trying to do that, PVS is probably the better play. So that's one of the choices you can pick here. Or another, where you can say, well, it's none of those above. It's just a machine I've already provisioned. I want to just put the agent on it, and I want to connect to it. That's basically what you would do. So here I'll select MCS just to make this simple. Now, I could select random or static like I showed in the PowerPoint earlier. It's just a choice. It's a design choice. Do I want these things static so every time that person comes back, they're always going to get it? But in this case, I'll just say random, make it simple. And then I'll select my resource. Now, here I'm going to connect to VMM. And what I'm going to do through VMM is going through and talk to Hyper-V and say, please enumerate every VM I see that has a base image I can grab from. So I'll select Windows 2012 right here. And this will be the one that we're going to use. So let's pick this one. And pretty much here, we go through the process of defining how many, what's the RAM we want to do, if we want to do 60 gig of a disk, or and so forth. What is interesting about if you're using this route from a design choice, this does not support dynamic memory. So if you're using Hyper-V, which if you are, great. Scalability is really, really good. That's my side job. Everything that comes out of white papers, a lot of that stuff at Citrix, I do a lot of the scalability in Hyper-V. Unfortunately, that session isn't here. It is going to be repeated next week in New Zealand, so you guys can take a look at it. It's a lot of great information I'll share with you. But there is no dynamic memory in terms of using the wizard. You can run a quick PowerShell script afterwards, flip all the VMs, use dynamic memory, and you're good to go. If you were to do this wizard with PVS, that does support dynamic memory. So two different things you need to think about. If I want to do it just from the beginning, and PVS makes sense from our architecture, fine. Not a problem. You can do that, and you'll have dynamic memory out the gate. And so I'll pick my OU, and I'll say, let's just put it in this OU at the bottom, give it a name, and then we click, we click Next. And then we'll say test tech ed for the name of what we're going to call the catalog. And that's pretty much it. Now, it's going to go through that process, and this takes anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. It could be a little bit longer. I'm just doing this on this laptop right next to me, so it's actually going to get pretty intense and crush this. So I'm going to go and click High Progress and let that continue to build. So when he's creating the catalog, that's your first design. Well, am I just trying to deliver hosted desktops? And the way I get the apps inside of it, that brings us to design two. So let's flip over back to the presentation, which we have right here. Design number two is integrating SCCM 2012 into the mix. By show of hands, how many of you use it right now with Zen App? Just a few. How many of you didn't know that you could publish apps from SCCM to Zen App. Who didn't know that? It's been around for a while. It's not brand new, actually. This is our fourth release of this product. We first delivered it about 3.5 years ago, give or take. What allows us to do is do a really, really amazing set of things where we can take SCCM and we can leverage existing packages, whether they're MSI, whether they're AppV, whatever format those may be, and we can take those and effectively recycle them that you might be using for your physical machines, but yet now use them for your Zen App servers. So when would it be a good time to use this? Well, think about it this way. You're working in a big environment, a big enterprise customer or a big enterprise company, and you're trying to collaborate with your system center guys, and you guys are Citrix people. When I was in a big enterprise, that was the biggest challenge I had. I didn't really know my SCCM administrators. I knew that there were these guys that somehow got my apps to my desktops, but that didn't apply to me because I was so concerned about server operating systems and app delivery. Flash forward now, if I had that same technology back then, it had been really, really amazing to deliver apps directly into Zen App, but that really didn't exist 6+ years ago. So with this technology, we can actually leverage and make things a lot simpler to make those apps appear from SCCM. So it really is that single pane of glass. That's what it can do. If you have SCCM in your environment, you're already using it for your physical desktops, why not use it for your Zen App servers, if it makes sense? That's a design choice that you can make if it fits that particular bill. So what does it do for you in terms of assistance and help? Well, it unifies in terms of leveraging multiple packages. Like I said, we could use MSI files, CAB files if we're deploying those, let's say, to a tablet or to a mobile device. Either one of those packages that you're already using now, we're just going to recycle it. All we're going to do is take that same content, reuse it, and now deliver it over to our Zen App servers. What it also allows you to do is if you're a big enterprise and you don't really want to give someone all the Zen App rights in the world, but if you're on vacation, you want to let them do a little bit of work while you're away, like publishing apps, and they're a configuration manager person, not a problem. You can take care of that, and you can let them do the basics of publishing without having to impact your infrastructure. They can't go and reboot your servers unless they already have those rights. It's just a matter of simple app publishing tasks. So why use it and when would you want to use it? If you are using it, and let's say you don't have an app v5 infrastructure in place, because a lot of customers I speak with, it's either all SCCM or it's all app v in terms of the architecture. There's no happy medium. They're not using both. They've pretty much gone one way or the other. Some people say, well, I've got SCCM, but we don't have the app v server in place. Not a problem. We're going to use that same infrastructure now for Zen App to publish those applications from the physical desktops. That's one use case as to why you would do it. Let's build this out in terms of a nice little pretty picture here. What we have here is the console, and the console is going to be our interface just like it is for the physical desktops, but now for virtual. But we have a couple requirements. You just can't, you know, publish those Zen App servers and make it magically appear. There's some work you gotta do first. You have to create your deployment types just like you normally did for desktops, but now you're going to actually provision them for Zen App servers. There's some particular agents you have to have installed. There's a connector that extends the console, and there's some agents that go on your Zen App servers on your clients. So there's some dirty work you have to do first before you can just make this magically work. But once you have installed, effectively, that's what you're able to do, is to kind of go through a process like this. The deployment types that you may have are pretty standard. Now, with 2012, it's not like 2007 R2. For those of you that have experience with it, you pretty much remember in 2007 R2, you only targeted one thing. It was a device and a collection, a physical machine. There was no concept of users and devices or affinity between those two. It never existed until 2012. So in the previous version of the connector for 2007, it was just slap all the apps to those Zen App servers and that's it. There was no theory of what if Jane logs into, you know, an iPad, for example. She gets an app that we know we can't install there. How do we know that it's secure enough so that it should not run there and it should run on her primary machine? Those are some of the things that SCCM 2012 brings to the picture. So we have these deployment types that we have here. Now, we're just going to leverage what we've already done in the demo when we get to that in a little bit. But you can see here, there's AppV, there's MSI deployment types. That's kind of what we're going to focus on for the rest of this portion of the presentation. But what makes it nice is that when we go through the rest of this, we're concerned also about hardware. So when we target that app to Zen App servers, we want to be really intelligent. We just don't want to say, well, when Tony logs in and, you know, he's going to use this particular machine, it's trusted, it's not on the domain, or it is trusted, whatever way, it doesn't make sense in some scenarios to just let that person have the app. We want to be really, really smart about it and leverage these rules and engines that we can create from the Configuration Manager console. So let me give you an example. So you can see here, it's kind of like a Boolean query at the very bottom. There's an if statement. And the if statement starts like this. If it's me, and let's say I have a laptop, or better yet, let's make it a thin client. It has less than 512 mega RAM. Then let's take that Adobe application that's a deployment type I've already created, and let's deliver it to Zen App. That's a no-brainer, right? You guys are all smart. That makes total sense. But what happens if we change the game a little bit? What happens now if I'm on another device and it's my primary PC and I have a machine that has a hard drive that's greater than 40 gig? Doesn't it make sense then to use that app v application than having to go execute on the Zen App server if I can? That's what the sort of logic and the deployment types that we can do with Connector is. Now, let's look a little bit further. Again, if it's my primary device, like I mentioned earlier, same thing applies. I take that application and I can deliver this one in an MSI format straight to my primary device I'm logged into, like my laptop in front of me. It's on the domain, it's trusted, it's what I use every single day. That's my primary device. But this tablet here, there's no way it's on the domain, it's hardly even trusted. So this makes total sense to run that application hosted. That's kind of what that deployment type model is like. So this is what the steps look like if you're going to publish it. So you create your application just like normal. You package it, you sequence it, you do whatever you want. You make it in the format that's available, either MSI or AppV. But what's unique about this is that you target it at your Zen App collection servers. And you also target it at your users. It's a two-step approach because you want to use that new logic of Configuration Manager 2012 instead of just saying, hey, slap it all on the Zen App server, make it all nice and full and overload it. Not really. Let's use some smartness about it and let's figure out if we want to target it at that server or not, depending upon the user's machine. That's the logic that we can apply with the connector. So the app workflow goes like this. I've got my administration console here. And what I can do basically is go through the console. And I've already done some of the work. And I'll show you this in the demo. I can go through this process of taking the console and publishing my deployment type with the parameters. I then send that application to my series of Zen App servers in the farm. Now, I can do some really intelligent things. I can actually say, well, it's not maintenance. It's not 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. Don't apply this package because it doesn't make sense to do it when the server is fully loaded. That's some of the rules that you can achieve when you use this correctly. You can say, okay, from 3 to 6, it's maintenance, install the app. From 8 to 5, don't do anything, it's business hours. So once that's done, the controller then has the application delivered from the SCCM console all the way to him. And the end user has a choice. When they want to execute the app, they can do it one of two ways. Either A, they go through the receiver and launch the application, or B, they go through the SCCM catalog portal. So there's two different ways a user can get to that app. And either way, it's going to say, okay, great, I just noticed it's you that logged in, and by the way, this isn't your primary device, and oh, by the way, it's a machine that doesn't have 4 gig of RAM. Let's run that app on Zen App. That's pretty much it. So that's the logic between how it goes. Now, if you're going to use this with PBS, let's say you have a bunch of Zen App servers in a pool. How does that work? Same way as before. You prepare your master image. You have a single image that all these Zen App servers are using. You install your SCCM agent, so it's installed there. It's ready to talk to the connector and to the console. And then you go through the same process of applying your rules and publishing the application. So whether we're doing it to a series of servers that are physical, virtual, or Zen App pooled, it doesn't matter. You can do it either way. So let's show you what that looks like in a demo. And we'll flip back over here to this machine. So far, this is making sense. Some of this might be new. Some of you did raise your hand and say, yeah, I'm aware of this. I know I can do this. But for those of you that have not heard about it, it is a pretty powerful tool. If you're an enterprise and you use System Center day in and day out, it's free if you're a Citrix customer. You already have this product. You just have to download it. All right, so let's go to my SCCM server, which we have right here. So as I mentioned earlier, I have different deployment types. These are already pre-created. I did my homework, got them all ready for you. So let's show you what that looks like. I already have a Microsoft Mathematics app here, and my deployments are already set up. So I've got a target of my Zen App farm, and I have all my users already enabled here. You can see because I have the console extender already installed, there's now this node that says NAT publications. It's not there by default in SCCM, but when you install the connector, it extends the SCCM console, so now it's there. You have the ability to publish apps directly to your farm. So let's go back and let's look at what this looks like. I want to go ahead and create a new deployment type for Mathematics app. So let's go ahead and follow what this looks like. From here, I'll hit the dropdown. You can see it says NAP 6.5. That's right there in the bottom of the pane. We click Next, you know, give it a name. We select New. Now, this part looks just like CPS 4.5, version 5, version 6. Conceptually, you're just publishing applications, but you're doing it from this console. That's the sweet thing about it. So here we'll say the name. We can add a description if we want, and we'll click Next. Now we can do V5 apps, or if it wasn't an app, it was already natively installed, we can select that here as well. We'll select the package. It's got a unique GUID, so we know it's one of a kind. And we can add shortcuts to the desktop. And then if I had access gateway, I can configure advanced settings, you know, apply policies and so forth. And then we'll click Finish. So here is that app. It's going to be an V app streamed from SCCM all the way to my ZenApp server. And then we do Next and Finish. This takes about 10 seconds. It's going to go through, say, OK, great. Is this available? Is it an app I can use? It's going to run through a little bit of the thing, and then say, OK, great. It's ready to go. Now, normally, you have these intervals here. Like, I can run this task sequence scheduler. I want to force it because I'm impatient. I don't want to wait 20 minutes. I don't want to wait till it's 3 in the morning to my maintenance window because there's no one on here but me. So I'll just force that real quick, and then I'll also force the synchronization. So at this point, it's saying, OK, great. Let me check for this app, shove it over to my ZenApp server, and see if it's ready to go. So once this pops up, if the demos are working correctly, we'll go to our ZenApp 6.5 server here, and we should see something different. Even I have eval licenses too, guys, and I work for the company, so... It stinks. So you can see here, these are the same apps that I already had published. If you go back to the SCCM console, they were apps I pre-created, I pre-published from that console, and they appear here in my 6.5 console, just like that. So if this works, and I right-click and I refresh, Mathematics just appeared. So all of that from one UI of System Center, it's a super powerful tool. We think it is. That's why we're putting a lot of time, a lot of energy into making more and more of ZenApp and Zen Desktop System Center aware. That's one small thing we can do. There's a lot of other things we can do that if you wait till next week, there's another video I'll show. I actually did this demo at TechEd a few weeks ago. Who uses VMM right now? Very few? All right, what if I told you I could deploy an entire infrastructure, a controller, ZenApp server, provisioning server, in 10 clicks or less with one image? I can do anywhere you want. In the cloud, public cloud, private cloud, doesn't matter. We have a tool that we're working on that's coming out pretty soon. And actually, it does everything. Not only does it install Zen Desktop for you, not only does it build it, it also goes to the basic process of creating your master image too. So everything I did here, I did from scratch. I mounted my ISO, I did all the dirty work because I had to. But why should I have to if it's just a VM I need? And it's a template I can grab. It'd be really cool if I can just automate and just say, hey, go to town and build me 10 controllers. Oh, by the way, build me 10 ZenApp servers. And when you're done, give me an email. That's what we're working on. So check back next week at the other Tech Ed. You'll see a video that I have that shows basically how we do that. It's super easy. It's pretty cool. It doesn't get better than that. So that's what that looks like. I published it. Now, I could do more demos on this particular topic, but we're short on time. I could spend 3 hours on just the connector because you can go down so many routes of getting the app to the desktop or to the user, but I don't have time. So just conceptualize, that's what you can do in today. The difference with this demo, I want to reiterate, that was ZenApp 6.5, okay? If you're looking at Zen Desktop 7, we're working on a release to have the connector for version 7, all right? So there is a little bit of a change here. That's still old school ZenApp. It's not really part of version 7. But for most people, they haven't fully migrated 6.5 to version 7. They're in the process, they're designing stuff. So that's stuff you can do currently today if you still have that available for ZenApp 6.5. Any questions so far? Does that make sense? Not sure yet. It's coming. It's not too far. They're still writing the code, so it's not too far away. Right. Right. Because in version 6.5, we targeted the farm and the collection of objects in the farm. Version 7 isn't like that. There is no farm, right? It's all about catalogs and groups when I build RDS servers. So we have to really rethink that, re-engineer everything from the ground up. So it's code that is being written. They don't have a prototype yet publicly available, but they're still working on it, and it's not too far away. All right, so let's continue. So that was one design. Here's another design, VM-hosted apps. Who's heard of this before? A few, really cool, great. So this will be a little familiar for a few of you then. For the rest of you, this will be pretty new. What is VM-hosted apps, and what are the use cases from a design perspective, why I should use it? It's really, really, really simple. You have some machines that are Windows client operating systems that have applications that, for whatever reason, you've tried everything under the sun to make them multi-user aware, and they just won't work. The vendor's out of business. It's a machine or an application that has to have a USB dongle, a security token, something funky like that. That's just what I like to call a craplication. It's really old. It's like, come on, rewrite this, please. It's 2013. Get to something better. Those applications you can still leverage. Especially, get about this, I think about this even more. You're running Windows XP, and there's still plenty of people doing it. Matter of fact, I know a company still running DOS. That's scary, but there's people still running DOS nowadays for their business to run the applications on. That's even scarier. But if you have a use case for it, you can punch a hole and you can get to that application that's on that legacy operating system or that legacy application on a newer operating system and execute it with Zen Desktop. What does that look like? Let's show you right into the demo. So we'll flip over to number 7. Let's visit Mr. Lumberg again real quick. And let's go back to our controller. So here's what I have set up. Again, back to this design, I have my catalogs and my groups. And VM hosted apps works like this in the sense of I have a Windows client VM here. It's Windows 7. Now, on that application, I have this app that I need to get access to, and I'll use App B as an example. It's old, it's not multi-user compatible, but what I want to do is run that application in a seamless window. I don't want an RDP session, I don't want a broker session, I just want the app by itself. That's what VM hosted apps does. So you can see what I'm going to do is remote into this particular machine here. It's a VM, that's the name of the VM that's on my hypervisor, but when I connect to it, it's going to look a little bit different. So let's show you what that looks like. We'll go to storefront here, and what I'll do is go ahead and put in my credentials and authenticate. So bear with me just a minute while I log in. Storefront's going to go talk to the backend Zen Desktop infrastructure, say, okay, great, here's what access you have at too. You have desktops and you have apps. Notepad 2007, you can see there it says Windows 7 App V. That's the app that I want to connect to that's running on that Windows 7 VM, but the cool thing about it is I want to connect to it in a seamless window. I don't want a whole operating system, even though it's on there. I just want a seamless user interface to this application. And that's what it looks like. So if you have a use case, you got these old craplications, you got this legacy operating system, or you have this hybrid array where you just want the app, but you don't want to confuse the user, you want to make it simple for them, that's the way you can leverage it. So that's another design choice. Part of version 7, it actually even existed in version 5.6, but a lot of people forget about that it's still there. So it's a very niche case, but you can do this if you really, really need to. So let's get out of here, and I'll close this out. And we'll get back to the presentation. So that takes us over to design 5. Studio integrated App V5 apps. How many of you knew that in version 7 of Zen Desktop, we pretty much defaulted to App V5? Everything we do from a streaming perspective is App V5. Everything we build is App V5 in terms of the studio console. There is no Citrix application streaming, it's gone. It does partially exist in the sense if you want to use an older operating system. However, if you're looking at Windows 8 or Server 2012, the only mechanism for delivering it from the studio UI is App V5. You cannot use Citrix application streaming. We realized the amount of work it would have taken to re-engineer that, and we just said, it's not worth it. And on the same side, we realized how great Appv5 is, and 5 OSP1 and above, and that made a lot more sense from a design perspective for us to leverage that. So let's talk about the use cases for that. When you don't have SCCM, believe it or not, I met some people in the exact same way that said, hey, I have no SCCM, I have AppV infrastructure across the board. This is the way I want to deliver my apps. We said, sure, not a problem. It's real simple for us to make a connection to your AppV infrastructure. Here's how the design components work. There's some Citrix Studio extension consoles, particularly it's called the AppV Studio SDK. That is the way we leverage the publishing process from the studio underneath the covers to the AppV console, the AppV server, so the management server, and then grab that data and deliver it back to the VMs, whether they're server VMs, whether they're Windows 7, doesn't matter. So we need that SDK, it's there. It's something that we leverage as part of the deployment process. Each one of these are kind of like an order of how we go through the process of building the app. And the flow sort of starts like this. We use what's called the AppV launcher. That's what we leverage that's underneath the hood. This executable is responsible for us going and say, hey, fetch me the app, make sure I got the right GUID, and then great, send it back over to this machine that I want to log into. Each of those GUIDs are important because we want to make sure we don't stomp on another app that might have a similar GUID, if at all possible. So grabbing that GUID information from this CTX AppV launcher is super critical. But the good thing is, as you see all of this circle of life, I guess if you want to call it, for getting apps, you never touch this. You never see it. The studio does it all for you. That's the nice part of it. In terms of console integration, it's right there. Directly within the studio, you have the ability to connect to your AppV5 management infrastructure. All you need to do is append the FQDN, put in the right port, and magically you have a connection. Now, of course, you need to also possibly do PowerShell remoting, set that up, and remote execution. So if you have that set up, that's available, then you have the ability to connect and publish those applications. How the user launches it, it's pretty simple. Whether you're using the start menu, whether you're using search, whether you're using storefront, whether you're using Mac, whether you're using Windows, it doesn't matter. Each one of those, you have the ability to go ahead and connect, search for the application once it's enumerated and published, and the user can log in and launch the application. In terms of endpoint experience, it's pretty simple. Whether it's hosted to the machine, streamed to the server, we still have file type association. So if you have a file, it's got an XLS extension, you can double click that file and we can, behind the scenes, figure out whether it makes sense to launch it as a hosted app or a local app that's delivered via AppV. So let's see what that looks like. And we'll go over to this machine here. Same setup here. So this one was the one I had running on Windows 7. But if I go back to my controller and we take a quick look at it, here's the one I have running here that's on Windows Server 2000 R2. If I want to take a look and see what sort of machines I have, or better yet, let's take a look at our groups. Let's see what applications I have set up. So I'll right-click on my group, and I can say View Applications. Now, if I have them already published, it's going to go and say, hey, here's the apps that you have published. Just like XenApp, they're Office 2010 apps. It could be, you know, any application. But in this case, it's Microsoft Mathematics. That's an AppV application. So what does that look like if I wanted to do it from scratch? So let's create an application. Let's show you what that is. I'll select Next here, and I'll assign my delivery group. Now, this stuff I already have created. I've created some Windows 2012 or some Windows 2008 machines, and I go through this logic of figuring out of a way to publish my app just like I would if I was a XenApp administrator. Now, when I have the virtual agent in my master image, this is the cool part. It goes and it queries the VDA. It says, hey, enumerate not only what apps are natively installed, but what apps I can see from the AppV server. So with a simple click, I can figure out, do I want to make this an AppV app or a natively loaded app that exists in my master image? So here I can select, okay, command.xml file. It's already an AppV app. It's already sequenced from the AppV server. I want to bring that now down to my XenApp server. I click Next and Finish. So at that point, Studio is basically creating a hosted application just like I would if I was a XenApp administrator. That's the logic. But the nice thing is it wasn't all about just apps inside there. I didn't have to go and use the old AppV conduit command, which is really, really old for XenApp. All I did was talk directly to the AppV management infrastructure server, find out what apps are there, bring them over, and publish them on the XenApp server. That's it. It's pretty simple. So we made it really, really easy for users to do that. Once that's published, as a user, that's the application I see. They don't really care how they get it, as long as they get it. So if it's an ATP5 format, that's fine. If it's MSI format, that's fine too. The most important thing is that they can launch and execute that application. So let's see if that launches. We'll try one more time here. Any questions on this? Does this make sense in terms of the new way of publishing apps? It is a little bit, and I don't have the best system in the world either. So if you got a free server, please, I need one, donate to me. I could use one to make my demos faster. But yeah, it does take time in terms of the sequencing process, because we do have to go, and if the app isn't pre-cached, then we're not going to do anything. It's just like app being on a normal machine. If you don't have it pre-cached, you're going to wait. So there's a really good blog, I can't remember the guy's name, Tim Mangan, I might have his name pronounced incorrectly. But he had a really good ATP blog that just came out about 2 days ago about the best way, specific for VDI, to pre-cache your ATP applications. I think there's like three or four ways he talked about, but there's one specifically that is the absolute best way if you're using ATP in a VDI format. I'll try to find it for you guys and post it on the slide that's going to be posted publicly. But it's a really super good article if you're using ATP. But that's effectively it. You come in, you log in, and that's the app that user gets. All right, so that was that demo. So let's go to the last one I have, which is DNA design number 5. Another great function that you can use if it fits the bill, and that's called local app access. This came out in version 5.6. We had this really, really funny name called reverse seamless, because it was kind of confusing to people, like, what does reverse seamless mean? Why the heck would I want to use that? Here's why. Let's say you have some applications, and let's say you are on XP, and you're still trying to get to Windows 7 or Windows 8 or whatever that may be. You run into a situation kind of like hosted apps where you want an application, but let's say this is the machine you're on and it's in front of me right here, and it's an old machine, it's got Windows XP. I really like the apps that are on here, but what I'd like to do is to be able to remotely access the apps natively installed on my machine from my VDI virtual desktop. That's what local app access allows you to do as an administrator. You can configure which specific application based upon a parameter path and based upon some rules that if you want to enable a user, they can launch the same application remotely. So I'll show you how that works. I'll go straight to a demo and show you the UI and what that looks like. It's a little confusing. It was for me the first time I heard about it a few years ago. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense at all. But then I thought about some apps that really, really need a certain sort of set. They're very hard-coded, and somehow you might need to get to them. Like, for example, a macro. You have a macro that was written in Office 2003, and for some reason, you cannot run that macro in 2010 or 2013. That's a very good use case for local app access. So I'll go back to the controller. Let's take a quick look here. Here's an application I already have created. So if I want to create it, there are some prerequisites to do in the controller first, but here's how you would do it. You click on right here, create local app access. You click next. You'd select your delivery group. Now, I know when this user comes in, they're going to log into a Windows Server 2012 hosted desktop. Only when they log in that desktop should they have the ability to remote back into their machine they came from, their endpoint, and launch that application. So I'll select this one. I'll give it a name right here, and that's the path. So let's say it was C:\programfiles, x86, Microsoft Office, da-da-da-da-da-da. The path of the exe is what you put in here because that's the only program you want them to remotely execute. And when you're done with it, it basically looks like this. I'll go back here and I will show you right here. We'll right-click it here and we'll look at applications. Here's one that I've already pre-created called Local Excel 2007. When I log into this virtual desktop group and on this particular user, I should have the ability to execute a local app living here. So let me show you what that looks like. So let's go to our desktops, same user. There's Windows Server 2012 shared. Now if this works, it's a demo, I got my fingers crossed. What should happen as a user is I should see something pop up. And let me minimize that out the way real quick. Get out of there, right there. Let's window size that real quick. So I'm on the Server 2012 pooled desktop or Zenapp server. You can see here one thing. There's something called Local XL 2007. But if I make this a little bit bigger, so you guys can see it in full screen, let's take a look at what applications I might natively have installed here. So here we'll go to Control Panel, and we'll uninstall the program. Now, I know I have Office 2013, but I'm seeing the XL 2007 app. Where is that coming from? That's the exe of the app that's right here on this laptop. So if I want to execute it, what does this look like? Just like that. So that's 2007, but the cool thing is I also have documents. So that macro now works. That's living here on my physical desktop through my virtual desktop. So that's the use case for local app access. Make sense? I suck at Pac-Man, so I'm just going to get out of this real quick. Close the app, and then we're out. So I could have been any group. I could have been any OS that I chose, Windows 8, 2012, Windows 7, pool desktops. All they have to do is configure if it makes sense to use certain applications behind the scenes. All right, and let's go back to our PowerPoint. That's pretty much it in terms of the designs. There's more that possibly could be done, but these are key things that really differentiate Zen Desktop between anybody else. No one else on planet Earth can do what we do. Not VMware, not even close. Each of these designs are very specific because we've had millions of customers that each try to do something that they need help with us to solve a problem. One other tip and trick I'll recommend, this is really cool. There's some PowerShell code that I wrote in here you can use, or I shouldn't say I wrote that, I got that you can use. What if you are publishing at the apps, again, through Zen Desktop, but let's say your at the 5 administrator is gone for the weekend or he went to Comic-Con like mine did when I was an administrator. And you did all this great work, right? But the user can't see the icons, which is pointless. They're logged in the virtual desktop, they make all these help desk calls, but there's no icons. You're troubleshooting stuff, you're like, hey, I did my work, it's there, it's your fault. Well, what if there's a way to just make icons magically appear? Kind of like Lucky Charms. Here's how we do it. We go through the same logic, this is how it works behind the scenes in terms of PowerShell. We use the SDK, and the SDK also leverages the AppV client. So same stuff applies. You still have the AppV client on your master image. Still have to have it. It's a requirement for AppV in general. There's no real way around that. But what we can do is leverage some really cool PowerShell code right here. When we use Zen Desktop, we can say, okay, hey, there's this particular group. I'm going to query the controller and use a command that says get broker desktop group. And I want to look for these particular groups. And let's say it's a group that's named XYZ. When I run the second command, I can say, okay, add icons for this particular Zen Desktop group, and then the icons appear on the desktop. The only caveat to this, again, this is a nice little trick, is that when the icons are there, there's no way for you to remove them in the sense of using a UI. You have to go backwards and use PowerShell. So there are some drawbacks to this, but imagine you need to do this. You're in a pinch. The guy that is responsible for app V5 is gone for the weekend. You can still get icons appear because you have PowerShell remoting enabled from your controller to your app V servers. So everyone's seen all this great stuff. This is all current code, stuff you can use today. But what is next? What is it that we're working on at Citrix? What's coming in the future? What are things that I can show you that I haven't been able to show other sessions? Let's take a look. So the first thing I'm going to show you that you may know of and you may not know of is going to be that we do support and are will going to support Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2 in the very near future. So if I bounce back to my demo machine, I'm logged in. And what I want to do is actually go to a prototype system that I have here. Same user, logging in. Nothing special except for the apps and desktops I get are going to be compliant with Windows 8.1 and Server 2012 R2. So we're working on supporting that because we know Microsoft is very, very close. Actually, they've announced already RTM for 8.1, and it's not too far away. So we, of course, at Citrix, try to be really close in terms of releasing our code to support their code. So you can see I have 8.1 pool desktops, and if all goes well, this will connect and work. Once this connects, again, it's going to look like Windows 8.1, but again, it's all delivered through Zen Desktop. Let's give that a second. and that should broker through correctly. So far, you can't tell a difference. Looks pretty much the same until you get to a point where you want to use your mouse, like mine, and my mouse isn't working. There we go. Let's minimize that. The joy of beta code, man. Sometimes it works and sometimes it just doesn't. But let's just show you the desktop. And we'll maximize this again. So it's Windows 8.1. You can see the start menu reflects it's 8.1. That's progress we're making. So 8.1 is coming. If you have a business reason for it, you're super, super, hey, I'm bleeding edge everything. I got to have it all. Even if I haven't tested it, you got to have it. We're working on it. So hang tight. Believe me, there are people that are like that and just deploy without even testing. Shame on them. 2012 R2, that's coming as well. So we can support that. That's not too far away as well. So we'll say OK to permit use. And this will look like Server 2012 R2 hosted desktop. Nothing different, except it's a new release of Windows Server 2012. Start menu, it's R2. So that's coming in the near future. What else is next I can show you? It's only version 7 and above. So whether it's a feature pack or a dot release, I'm not aware yet. Could be a dot release. It just all depends on what we do at the very end. But it's coming. Let's go back and let's show you what else is next. I have just a few more things. And we'll get to the best part, which is the solid state drive, because I know that's what you guys want. Citrix Receiver, what else do we have for that? This is also coming. So of course you know you can do iPad. But who knows, or who knew, that this was H.264 compliant? That's the beauty of using Receiver, whether it's iPad or whether it's even Windows. The Receiver now uses H.264 super codec, so video compression audio is a lot better than it was before in previous releases. So keep that in mind, but let me go back and show you what I have working over here. What we came out with a few weeks ago, if you weren't aware, get back here, was Receiver here on Windows Phone 8. Now, we have it at RTM. You can grab it from the store. But what I'm going to show you is something that's coming that's not quite out yet. So I'm going to minimize this real quick. And I'm going to log in here. And I'll pull this back up so you can see it. So I'll enumerate my applications with Receiver. And I want to use Word as just my simple example of an app. So hopefully if Wi-Fi is working, it's going to allow me to log in. So bear with me just a moment while I log in. I don't think anybody wants to see my password. It's pretty boring. So give me just a second and I'll log in and I'll show you what we're doing that makes this one pretty unique. Is there anyone out there right now using Windows Phone? Phew, hey, brave souls. Okay, great. If I had something to give you, I would, man. But I only have one thing. Sorry. So give me just a second. Of course, there's a specific system that I have to use, and that's why it takes a little bit longer for me to log in. But I'm doing two-factor right now, and once I'm logged in, we should be able to see it go through. Errors. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Yeah, demo codes. Well, what we would be able to do if that was working in a demo environment was that we can support landscape mode. So this is great, but this is better when you can run an app this way. So that's coming. The last one that we have that I'll show you, which is coming right here, is going to be on this device. So if you're a Windows user and you like the Receiver version that's on RT or the Receiver version that's on Windows Surface, you're going to like this one. So here's what we have. This is a prototype build also, but it's a new release of Windows Receiver. So I'm going to log in here, and this one's going to ask me for a password. And we have so many demos that I have so many different credentials. It makes for a really, really fun time. But you'll see what's interesting about this one is that it's something that we've never been able to do before. More time, oops, that's the wrong user account. Bear with me, sorry about that. And I will authenticate one more time. Oh, shoot. I love it when demos break, guys. One more time. One more time. Come on, work for me. It's thinking about it. And it's connecting. Okay. So what I'll show you here is something that is coming on this version of Receiver. Obviously, it's Windows Server 2012. But what makes it so unique? Let's go ahead and open up an application like Internet Explorer. That looks the same, except for this. Pinching and zooming. Right from Receiver inside a virtual desktop. Can't do that before, but that's coming. So if you're the sort of person that loves the iPad because you can pinch and zoom, you'll be able to do that now on the Windows RT or Pro device as well. So pinch and zoom is coming, but it's something I want to show you guys because we're working hard at that. And now, let's get to the good stuff. Key takeaways. If you want to come up real quick, Steven, that would be great. We're going to get to the good part. Obviously, for everybody that was paying attention, you know we support the latest and greatest for version 7, whether it's 8, 8.1, whether it's 2012, whether it's 2012 R2, or at V5. We support all of it. The most important thing I want you to think about is you go back to your business and you think about what's the best way for me to design something is to remember this, that one size does not fit all. There is no magic answer for every user problem. There's only a magic design. So don't go back and say, I'm going to shove everybody in VDI because it's what someone told me to do, because it's not right. It doesn't fit everyone's problem. It doesn't solve their issue. You have to use the right design for the right business problem you're trying to address. So that's the point I want you to go back and say, hey, I can do all the stuff with Zen Desktop that I didn't know I could because I'm only using CPS 4.5, or I didn't even know that I could do this in version 7 because I'm on version 5.6. All different things that you can do just by redesigning what's the right solution. So it's time to give away an SSD, and we're going to make this really, really fun, okay? Really, really simple.
Simple?
Yeah, simple, okay. So show of hands, and we can pick two people. You can pick someone for me, and I'll pick someone for you.
That's a good idea.
Good idea?
So that sounds fair.
Okay, raise your hand if you want this. This is really expensive, guys. You really want this, trust me. Okay, you pick someone for me.
Yellow shirt.
Yellow shirt, okay. And I will pick someone for me, for you, I should say. Pick the guy in the green, right there. Okay, are you ready? Come on up.
Come on up.
This is going to be fun. You're going to like this, trust me. Everybody likes this part.
So either you go, guys, you're either going for yellow or green. This is that simple.
Okay, ready?
All right.
So here's what we're going to do, and this is really fun. And yeah, I do this out of, I do this out of just, you know, fun. We're going to play a cool game. Rock, paper, scissors, Spock, lizard, so forth. It's really fun. But we're going to make it really simple and really fast because you could do this game for hours and hours and hours. And believe it or not, there's some people that don't know how to play rock, paper, scissors. No harm done if you don't, but I put this cheat sheet up in case you don't know how to play. So guys, do you know how to play rock, paper, scissors? All right, we'll make this super simple because, like I said, we could take hours. And here's the logic, the smart thinking you have to do. You can only choose one thing of those items once. So if you're going to call rock, that's it. You can't call rock again. If you're going to call scissors, you can't call scissors again. So think about your choice. We're going to do best out of two, best out of three, best out of three.
Yeah.
Okay? Ready? So that's the way you have to do it. That's the only way you're going to get this. So the winner, best out of three, gets to have this. Fair enough? It's really expensive. Come on, you want this. Trust me, you really do. All right, so the way we're going to do this is I'm going to use my hands. We're going to go one, two. On the third, you make your symbol, whatever that may be. Okay, ready? And you want to judge? Or actually, you guys can help us. If we're correct, please let us know. Because I made a mistake before, one time. Okay, are you ready? Let's go. One. All right. Oh, on the third try. Third try. Okay, there's your practice. When I do the third sound, when you hear one, two on this third sound, that's when you make your sign. Are you ready? Okay, ready? One, two, three. Ooh. Okay. Ready? Next one.
Tie.
Ready? One, two.
Oh!
This could be the first time this ever happens. First time for everything. Are we ready? Last one. Ready? Yep. Sudden death if you guys tie again. Ready? One, two, three. According to this,
lizard.
Decapitates. Scissors decapitates paper.
No. Lizard versus scissors.
Say scissors wins. Oh. Right? Congratulations. There you go. All right, so that's all I have in terms of Q&As. Step up if you have questions. If not, I've got some additional resources in the slide deck. Related content, don't miss this session tomorrow for more scalability stuff with Department of Defense. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.